Hubbardradio.com.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ.
It's great to be back. Florence for a week.
And so
I was watching all the technology over there.
Yeah, I know. This is purely business trip.
It is purely business. Mm-hmm. And so it was. So first thing, I was walking around Florence, and the this is the first time I've been to Florence with a with an iPhone.
Okay.
So I downloaded the walking app for Florence.
Oh.
And you just select whatever item you're going to go to, and there's a little compass, and it shows you the direction of the item. You just can walk around.
No kidding.
It's actually quite convenient, and they've got, you know, I use Google Navigation walking around, just mm-hmm. walking around Florence, and so it was actually quite nice. And then you watch everybody. Almost all the pictures are smartphones.
Really?
There are hardly any of these, you know, big cameras.
The stereotypical tourist with a camera around their neck.
Yeah,
you don't see any of that anymore.
Everybody's got a smartphone. And the other thing is you go to a sidewalk cafe in Florence. You know, you've got you look across the piazza. There's the statue of David. It's a replica. The real one is in the academy.
Mm-hmm.
So you're sitting there in this great environment. And people are sitting there looking at their iPhones, checking their email, not talking. I'm thinking, man, this has really changed life because it's everywhere.
Yeah.
Now, the only disadvantage is the GPS system and the camera eat up battery life fast.
Mm-hmm.
So the biggest challenge in Florence was to keep my iPhone charged.
I'll bet. Now, you need a different charger over there, right? Because they have a different wall plug?
Yeah, you just have an adapter.
Oh, okay.
I got a whole bag full of adapters, so yeah. you just have a different adapter. And, of course, the transformer on the iPhone, it will handle either 220 or 110.
Oh, no kidding.
So you don't need a voltage converter. You just need...
So the little white cube will plug into whatever adapter
Is, and mm-hmm. so then you have an adapter. It's got a different kind of prong system. So that wasn't a problem.
Doc, as universal as electric is, why can't the world agree on one wall socket?
Oh, no, what you're asking is, why doesn't Europe agree with the U.S. standard?
No, I'm truly. If there was something better, why wouldn't we adopt it? Well, we're not that way over here.
No, it turns out it's like a matter of national pride. That's like saying why don't the Italians use U.S. dollars? I mean,
that's a good point.
They want to have their own connector, and if you don't like it, you can make yours like theirs. I mean, that's. Mm-hmm. So that is the thing. But it was interesting to see how technology sort of had imposed itself there in Florence. And there was free Wi-Fi everywhere.
Oh, that's cool.
So you could actually get free Wi-Fi around. And
But you guys still got to be careful over there. Do you need to be more careful, and certainly in certain foreign countries, using Wi-Fi systems? Or?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you don't do anything.
Same rules apply?
Yeah, the same rules apply. Because you could sit there with a password picker-upper. That's a technical word for a piece of software. You could sit there. Well, this is tech talk for just the average guy.
Exactly right.
And so you could sit there, at a Starbucks or someplace, and you could just grab all the passwords. So actually, when I am on travel, I do zero online banking.
Yeah.
And I never check my email unless I've got a secure location. But what you do is that if you get Wi-Fi, so the advantage of the Wi-Fi is that you can download stuff. You don't need bandwidth, because
right.
my I didn't change the SIM card in myself. My iPhone is, of course.
You have a bag of SIM cards too, don't you?
I have a bag of SIM cards. Yeah, and so I've got Verizon iPhone, which of course is dual system. It's got CDMA as well as GSM,
mm-hmm.
and Verizon will actually unlock it for you.
Huh.
So I could have put in a new SIM card and then I could have made calls over there for a couple of cents a minute. I could have gotten a SIM card with a data plan. But it was just too much work, and occasionally somebody may want to call me or text me. So I decided to leave my SIM card in and buy the data plan. So the data plan was $25 for 100 megabytes, which for regular email is fine.
For like a year, what were you there, a week?
A week, and I ended up using two loads of that. So I ended up using $50 worth of data.
You're good for that.
I can handle it. Now, what I did before I left, I transferred money from the operating account over to my Verizon account so I could cover my data plan. But you see, the thing is, if you take an upload, like if you set up PhotoStream, mm-hmm. and you're uploading and you're sharing your photos with other iPhones,
that's eating up
you
all
will
kind.
Just eat up your bandwidth. Mm-hmm. Well, you can set up PhotoStream and other bandwidth heavy applications to only transmit when you're in Wi-Fi. So that's what I would tend to use Wi-Fi for, that kind of thing. But it was a very very pleasant trip, but I am glad to be back.
It's good to have you back.
And
hey, speaking of walking apps, do you use Nike Plus?
No, so I don't have that.
You can actually figure out how many footsteps you took in a particular trip, how long you went, how many calories you burned. That's kind of neat.
Yeah.
Especially if you're walking around Italy all day eating pizza.
Well, I wish I would have had a Fitbit because actually I think I probably walked 9 or 10 miles a day.
You're kidding? Really?
You walk everywhere.
No kidding.
Because you just don't take you just walk everywhere.
Uh-huh.
And so, you go someplace that's a couple of miles away, then you walk all around, then you walk up to the top of the Duomo, which is like 450 steps.
Uh-huh.
So I got a lot of exercise.
Good.
Offset by eating twice as much as I would normally eat.
And lots of pasta.
Lots of pasta, because it tastes so good. I mean, it's just amazing. You don't realize how good fresh-made pasta is.
I wish you could see
that.
His face. He's really serious about this.
That's right. It was really quite nice. So I did enjoy that. And while I was there, I decided to look at some of the history. So I looked at where Michelangelo was born, with his mm-hmm. house. Pretty nice house. Also where Dante was born.
Mm-hmm.
So there. But while I was gone, we got a huge number of...
There's a letter in your mailbox.
He couldn't wait to...
I know. There we go.
Mm-hmm.
But he still doesn't help me pick up the mailbag.
No, he won't. That's never going to happen.
I know. Dear Tech Talk, you should feature James Lowe in Profiles in IT. William C. Lowe, who supervised the creation of IBM's first personal computer and a technological touchstone that he insisted and proved could be conceived, engineered, and manufactured in a single year by a company not known for speeding product development. And he was a physicist. That's from James Messick, next week. That was a great suggestion, James. And next week I'm going to feature that.
James used the magic P word, physicist.
Yes, physicist. He knows what's going to, attract
gonna
my attention.
Right?
Yeah,
uh-huh.
Because, it makes me very happy. The other thing that I was there in Florence is still on my mind, how technology changes it. Of course, Dante was there, and he wrote the Divine Comedy in the 1300s. And so I decided, okay, I should read the Divine Comedy while I'm in Florence. It only seemed appropriate. So with my iPad, I just downloaded it. I mean, it just actually makes things so easy. I don't know. I think I got Florence on my head right now.
No, I can imagine it will be. I think I sense there will be a Stratford University Florence campus at some point.
Yeah, I think that could look. And there's some very nice buildings.
We may
there.
Have to do some remote broadcasts from there, I think.
That's right. It could mm-hmm. be quite a productive location. We got an email from Christy. Dear Tech Talk, I let my son play with my iPhone. Uh-oh, that's a problem.
Yeah, it is.
He deleted the message icon. This is for text messages.
Yep.
And I don't know how to get it back. There's no way to undelete it. I can't find it. You can't go to the App Store and unload it. It's just nowhere. Please help. I need to get it back.
I didn't know you could delete that icon.
You can delete the icon, but then the application is still loaded
on the phone.
On the phone, but the icon's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Christy, you can't undelete the message icon. There's no way to do that. But your program's still installed. You have to restore the icon by resetting the home page.
Right. Yeah.
So go to Settings, and then go to General, and then go to Reset. Now, be careful what you pick on Reset. You could erase your whole phone.
Mm-hmm.
There is one item under Reset called Home Reset. It's called Reset Home Screen Layout. Click that one, and that will restore all the icons that are default on the iPhone to their original location, which means they're going to kind of move around. Now, all the applications you've installed will stay there. So you might find that some of your, you know, like your, some of your things will move around and you'll have to set it up again. But at least all of the default icons will be there and ready to use.
That's good to know.
See, really the only way to get back the message icon. Actually, it took me a while to figure that one out. Because it's never happened to me before.
Well, that, you know, I see that. I've seen that under general settings, and I thought, man, I really don't want to hit that because I'm going to lose all the other stuff that I.
So you click reset, and then there's a whole list of about 10 or 12 things. So you can
just reset that one.
Yeah.
Particular.
So
icon.
The reset at the bottom, which you know, if it's going to reset the phone, you don't want to do that. It goes to a list of things, and you can reset the whole phone, but you don't have to. So
good.
That was actually quite a good question.
I learned
something researching that one out. We got an email from devoted listener in Bethesda. Oh, devoted listener.
Devoted listener.
Dear Dr. Schertz, I need to identify a software app that lets me build a custom library, a custom dictionary of disallowed terms. Once this list of custom disallowed words is built, I need to compare it to a PDF document or a Word document and have all the disallowed words highlighted. So we can, you know, go back and edit them or change them. Now, I've painfully learned that Microsoft Word won't let me do this, but I need to find another way. I really can't afford a Cadillac app, but could you please name the best tool that you think would be good and a few alternatives? Thanks, devoted listener. Well, devoted, I actually couldn't find very many, but I did find one option for you. And it's called Batch Word Highlighter 3.0. It's a shareware program. It's $49. You can download it from the web. And you go to batch-word-highlighter.com. I'll have the link on the website. Or you could just Google Batch Word Highlighter 3.0. And this will actually take a Word document, and it will highlight everything which is in the list of words that you want to have highlighted. You can put in a list that will highlight them all. And then you can go in and edit them. It's really the best I could find for you. Now, beware, I haven't tried it. I've just sort of checked it out. And so if it works, let me know.
Yeah,
so
you'll be part of the research arm.
That's right, so I have a data point. We got an email from Lauren in Bethesda. Dear Dr. Schertz, my tech guy, I'm hoping you might pull a rabbit out of your hat and solve my current iMac and HP printer handshake dilemma. I've got an HP Office Jet all-in-one GS85 printer, which was actually, about 85 years old.
85 years old?
No, sorry. It's about 15 years old. It's about a 10 to 15-year-old printer. And it works fine. But I'd like to continue using it. Now, I've owned my iMac since January 13th, and I've got a working HP Office Jet all-in-one. It's hooked to my Dell Inspiron, which I hardly use anymore.
Yeah.
But then when I tried to hook it up to my iMac, I couldn't get it to work because the print drivers that HP has released for this model only go up to OS X 10.4. And I think she's up to 10.6. I think she's got the latest one, maybe 10.6.2 or something. So I called AppleCare, and they said I should download the basic print driver for the deal. So they do have a basic print driver. Then they've got the expanded print driver that includes the fax function and the scan function. But if you just want the print function, that's the basic one. But I went and went to the HP site and looked this up, and you are right. They don't support anything beyond OS X 10.4. Then I did go to the forums.
She did a lot of work on this.
So I went to the forums, and the forums said that some people got the driver to work on 10.5 version, but no one got it to work on the 10.6 version, and that I could find no workaround for this at all. And the reason seems this is a USB printer, And it seems to be that some of these older printers, some of these first generation USB printers, there are problems with the USB port specifications or the standards, and that seems to be the case with the HP G85. And so as you get new and more operating systems, people are just not interested in keep rewriting the software to work around that USB standards problem. So I think you're pretty much stuck. You've got to get a new printer. Mm. Now, if you want to operate it with this, now here's the thing that HP does. Their printers are kind of loss leaders, and where they make their money up is on the print cartridges.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
The print cartridges. And so what you want to do when you're looking for a printer, it really depends on what features you want.
Right.
Now, first of all, do you want to have the whole all-in-one deal with the scanner and the fax and the printer? Many people don't use, they only use the printer function. So you want to look at that. If you do high volume printing, I do a lot of high volume printing at home. And what I did, I got it so that I have three different colors. I've got, the black and then actually four colors. I've got four color thing. And so like if I just print all black, I just change the black one, or I could print all blue.
Right.
If you get the cheaper printers, the three colors are in one cartridge. So if you run out of blue, you've got to replace the whole thing. You got to replace the whole thing. And so certain high volume printers, if you print a lot, are cheaper in the long run because you're saving money on the print cartridges.
It probably makes sense when you're looking at the printer to go walk over to the cartridge section and look at the cart and see how much they are too.
Yeah,
right?
And so what you do when you calculate the price of the printer, you can look up on the the website. It'll tell you how many pages you can print with each of these print cartridges, and you can calculate a cost per page. So you say, okay, in the first 2 years at the amount of printing I'm doing, how much I'm going to spend on cartridges. And then you can compare the total cost of ownership, say, over a 2 year period to select the printer. That's how I would do it. I can't really answer the question because you didn't tell me how much you're printing.
And you'll have to excuse me because I offered a low tech solution here. I'm assuming that she's in a store wandering around as opposed to you looking at her on a website, which would be way more efficient.
It would be a lot more efficient looking mm-hmm. around. Now if you basically don't print very much, you can get a printer almost free.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, you can get it because they just want to give you that printer because you start eating up the cartridges. Exactly, because they make that printer so it just burns through the cartridges and they'll sell you a lot of cartridges. So it just depends what you need, what you get. But I don't think I can help you with your G85 printer.
So send us some more info, right?
The print drivers, by the way, were dated 2005. Mm-hmm. The most recent print driver was 2005. So the most recent print driver is 8 years old. Mm. Kind of gives you a hint as to what the problem is. We got an email from Arnie McKechnie. He's one of our longtime listeners. Hi, Dr. Schertz. You mentioned on Tech Talk that you use iCloud for your Apple iPhone and iPad.
Nice shot.
Look at that.
Okay, if you were watching us on Home and Garden TV, you would have seen Doc with a left-handed hook shot into the trash can.
Yeah, exactly. I banked it right off the window, right in the trash can.
No, it was nothing but bag.
Yeah,
you didn't
right.
anything with the trash can.
I'm really on fire today. I'm on fire today. It's too bad this isn't TV. Yeah. Well, there's our Home and Garden television.
Well, there's that, but,
we
need an upgrade there.
Well, you have iCloud with your iPhone and iPad. Of course, I use the iCloud. I back up my iPhone with it. I do it for PhotoStream, for sharing photos. And it's just, it's very convenient because then when I get a new phone, I don't have to transfer the data. I just hook up the new phone. It automatically downloads everything from the iCloud. So it's extremely convenient. I can also share documents with it. But there are several, according to Arnie, and he's right, there are several other cloud systems where these are personal cloud systems where you say, I don't trust these guys. I'm going to set up my own hard drive and set up my own, my own remote storage. And so in the old days, these were just called network address storage, NAS. But now they want to call them cloud storage, And so it's just a hard drive hooked up to your local area network. But then what they do, they've organized the software so that there is a port through which you can access that hard drive through the firewall. So there'll be an external port, And there's a way to get at that hard drive from the firewall, so you could actually access that hard drive when you're outside of your home from your iPhone or another computer. So you could store from within the network or outside of the network, you know, anytime you want. Now, it's really not cloud storage because there's only one hard drive. See, the idea of the cloud is that you've got multiple hard drives and there's load sharing. You don't know where it's stored. But this is just a network address storage that's remotely accessible. But for marketing reasons, they call them cloud storage. So there are several of these. There's Western Digital's MyCloud, Seagate Central, Netgear's, Centria, Lackl's, CloudBox, iOmega's, Home Media, Networked Hard Drive. What do you think of these systems? Well, these systems are actually quite good. For one thing, if you've got a lot of storage stuff and you don't want to pay $10 a month for remote storage, or you want to, say, back up your laptop to the, like if you had a laptop and you're always hooked to the internet, you could back that up to that, you know, because I'm paying like $39 a year or something for, you know, to back up my laptop to the cloud. So you do have the advantage that you can save that a bit of money. And you also have the advantage that you know that you own the data. You're not going to have somebody hack into it. Now, most of the cloud systems that I use are highly encrypted, and it's difficult for people to get at them. But here's the thing you must be aware of. Now, you are responsible for the security and integrity of this hard drive. And hard drives fail. So if you're going to get a network address storage, you want to have what they call RAID. It's a redundant array of inexpensive devices, RAID. And so that means you've got multiple hard drives in the box, and you have redundancy. So that if one hard drive fails, you just swap in a new one, and the redundant data is copied to that hard drive, and nothing's lost. You don't have to do anything. Mm-hmm. So at a minimum, your network address storage must be RAID, and the lowest version of RAID is just two hard drives where you mirror them. So you save it to your RAID device, and it's copied to two hard drives automatically. And if one hard drive fails, swap it in, and then they just copy from one to the other. That would be the first thing that I would say. You must have RAID because now you're responsible for this. The second thing is, make certain that you've got good surge protection on it because you don't want to damage the electronics. The third thing I would say is that somebody could steal it. Somebody could come to your house and say, wow, look at this nice little device.
Sure.
And it's gone. You've lost everything. Mm-hmm. So I think if you're going to have a network address storage, I'd recommend that you put it in a place where if somebody breaks in, they're not going to see it. It's going to be maybe, you know, because you don't have to have it right out on top. So those are the three things. Just be aware of these issues. And then if you want to have 24/7 capability, you're going to have some sort of backup system. See, all of this cloud storage that you get, like with iCloud or with SkyDrive or with Google Drive, that's in a data center. It's fully backed up. It's 24/7, highly reliable. And the only issue is whether it's secure. And then you look at the encryption and the length of the encryption on it. But, you know, at one point, Arnie, I was walking down your path. And the ease of the remote clouds have just convinced me not to bother to do it. But that was a great question, and I've given you all the trade-offs. And so you can – I looked at all these different ones, by the way, that you had suggested. A lot you didn't give quite enough information. A lot depends on what you want to do with it. Okay, if you want to just simply do it as a backup, then you want to make certain there's very convenient backup software there for yourself. And so, if you want to do it for picture sharing, you might want to have software that's going to make picture sharing much easier, so you could give a link so people could share pictures. So I think the way you want to use this shared drive space and the applications that the vendors provide are going to also play into the choice. As long as you've got a RAID system, I don't think it matters much. Now, but if I was going to do picture sharing, I would do it on Picasa, which is a free cloud service, for instance, run by Google. We got an email from John in Woodbridge. Dear Tech Talk, I have to email some very large attachments, and they keep getting rejected by the recipient's email service. What are my options? Thanks, John in Woodbridge. Well, John, I have two standard methods to transfer large files. My first option, I use Gmail.
Yep.
Gmail can accept large attachments. I think their limits might be 20 megabytes
yes.
now. We send Tech Talk shows around when we're trying to get them posted up. And, a Tech Talk show, after we've resampled it, is around 14 megabytes. So we send Tech Talk files using Gmail, and it's really a quite convenient way to do it. Now, suppose you want to get something much larger than that. If the person you're sending to, they can just set up a free Gmail account and they can get it. But if it's something much larger than 20 megabytes, then what you want to do, you want to upload it to a cloud site, and then, or you could, if you had a network address server, you could put it on your network address server, and then you could just send the link. Same idea. But you upload it to a cloud site, and then you use a link, and you put it in a public folder in that cloud site, and then you simply send a link to the file to the person in an email. They click on the link, and they can look at it right at that cloud site, or if they choose, they could download it. So the most convenient one I use is Dropbox. So after what you do, you install Dropbox on your computer, and you'll set up your account, your username and password. I suggest you use a password that's hard to guess, so people can't get into your account. Then you're able to. Then you can create a public folder that you can share, and then you create a Dropbox subdirectory on your computer. So you simply drag the file to the local subdirectory on your computer, and it's synchronized with your cloud Dropbox. So you wait a while, wait for it to be synchronized, and then you can right click on that file, and it will give and it will give you the link. And so you can copy the link that's been assigned to that particular file, paste it in the email, and send it to them. So that works quite well.
Yes.
Now, but you want to make certain that you wait long enough so the file can be uploaded. I mean, just don't put it in there and then turn off the machine. You've got to make certain that it actually
right.
has time to upload, especially if it's a big file. Now, there are other cloud services other than Dropbox. There's Box. There's Google Drive. There's Microsoft SkyDrive. And they're all cheap up to a certain – they're all free up to a certain point, and then you've got to pay for additional storage if you want. Now, if you're primarily sharing pictures, I like to use a photo sharing site like Google Picasa or Yahoo Flickr. So there are a lot of other alternatives. If you're primarily sharing videos, use YouTube.
Yeah.
So those are your options, and great question.
Very good. And, of course, you were gone a week, the mail piled up, but
next week's another week, and we love the email. Send an email to techtalk@stratford.edu. And don't forget to check out our Facebook page, facebook.com/techtalkonline.
This is Saturday Morning, and of course you're listening to Federal News Radio and Tech Talk, heard here every Saturday at 9 a.m. on 1500 AM, 820 AM, 1077 FM HD2, 1035 FM HD2. More coming up right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
It's time. Time to put your talents out there on your terms. Get full credit for your ideas and hard work, and set your own pay. If you're ready to be your own CEO, Stratford University's life-changing Master's in Entrepreneurial Management program can show you how to develop and launch your business. From writing a solid business plan to financing, legal issues, staffing, even branding and marketing. Let Stratford show you the ropes and walk you over the pitfalls of running your own business. Choose from online or in-classroom courses at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge. It's time. Time to take charge of your future on your own terms. Contact us today at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu. Or give us a call at 800-444-0804. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University, it's time to be more.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And now it is time for
Profiles in IT.
Yes, today we're going to feature Sean O'Sullivan. Sean O'Sullivan is best known for co-founding Map Info Corporation, and for coining the term cloud computing.
Ooh. We talked a lot about cloud stuff.
We talked a lot about cloud stuff today.
Yep.
Sean O'Sullivan.
That's technical cloud stuff.
It's really a marketing term. Cloud
well,
computing.
Well, since we're into technical terms today, what was the one you had? Password grabbing device or
I can't remember what it is. It's already lost.
I should have written it down so you
could
copyright
it. It's very, very, very technical. Yes. He was born in Schoharie, New York in 1964. He had an early interest in computers and he volunteered to do work at his friend's businesses when he was 8 or 10. He would work on the computer because he just wanted to get access to that hot new machine, the TRS-80. That was released before the Apple computers. They used to call that Trash 80.
I remember that.
Remember the Trash 80?
That was the first computer ever touched.
He wanted to get access to that Trash 80. Yeah. Now he actually started learning how to program, and he got his first professional programming job at age 14, working for Schoharie County. And he kept programming, and actually he ended up getting a paid programming job at IBM at age 17. Then he decided, and mom said, okay, John, you've got to go to college. So he got his BSEE, Bachelor of Science in Electrical Engineering at Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute in 1985. And after graduation, he and three other classmates decided to form a company. These were all students there, and they wanted to develop a mapping tool for the PC. I mean, this was in 86. This was real. This was before Google Maps. This was really new stuff. And they got a contract to develop bus routes for the local school district, and they used the money to develop their first product. So, and they when they wanted to set it up, they went to the Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute incubator there on campus, and it was an incubator project. And they started working, and it was one of the top expanding growing tech companies after that. By 1992, it was Inc. magazine as their 500 most fast growing companies, and it was number 23.
Wow.
And because they were extremely innovative, this was MapInfo. They were one of the first movers in this thing. They did an IPO in 1994. And then in 2007, it went private, and Pitney Bowes bought the whole thing in 2007 for $408 million. So they did the IPO in 94, and they started it in 86. Well, I mean, that was actually 8 years. 86, 96. So,
right.
In 8 years, they basically did the IPO. Now, as soon as they got close to the IPO, Sean said, I got my money. I'm ready to move on. So in 1993, he founded SOS Ventures, which was a venture capital investment management firm. And, of course, that was to use the proceeds of all of his money, all of his IPO money. And he actually set the headquarters up in Cork, Ireland. Because Sean O'Sullivan.
He should be in Ireland.
I mean, he was born in New York, but hey, he's Irish.
There you go.
and so he founded this. He set it up in Cork, and in 1995, O'Sullivan founded another company called NetCentric. What he was trying to do, he was trying to basically sell a fax service over the internet. I mean, this was back, the browser wasn't developed till 94. So it was, the cloud was a little bit spotty back then, as they say.
Yes.
And he tried to get $5 million from Compaq. So he worked with George Favoloro. And during the interaction, he and George were working on the deal. He never did get the $5 million from Compaq, but a couple of weeks after he was at Compaq, he feels like he invented the term cloud computing. Now George Favoloro from Compaq says, "Well, really, I think I came up with that." But Sean said, "No, I think I came up with that." Well, in May 1997, NetCentric filed a trademark application for cloud computing, so they could own the name.
Right,
but shortly after he filed that, he just gave up the struggle to start an internet fax service. The company went belly up and closed its doors. So cloud computing was like a sad, sad chapter in Sean's life. So, but he still is remembered because he's the only one that filed trademarking for it. I don't think he was ever given trademarking for it, but he's known as the man who developed this. Now, after he sort of got into this, he started investing in firms through his VC firm. He got interested in charity and the arts. It's like he totally changed direction. And he went back to school and got a Master of Fine Arts in Film Production from University of California. His thesis was a full-length documentary about dementia. And his film won the 2005 Silver Images Award for the best documentary about elderly issues. And he was interested in what was going on in the world. So he became a freelance film photographer during the Iraq War.
Whoa.
And he was producing film about the Iraq War for CNN, Reuters, and Wall Street Journal. While he was over there, he said, you know, there are just so many humanitarian problems here in Iraq. He founded a company in 2003 called Jumpstart International. It was a humanitarian engineering organization based in Baghdad. And he operated it from 2003 to 2006. He spent a few years running Jumpstart, and for a time it had a staff of over 3,000. They were running 80 projects at the time in Fallujah, Najaf, and Baghdad region. And these were all hotbed regions over there. I mean, that Fallujah.
There's a lot of bad stuff going on.
Yeah. Then he finally stopped that project, and he continued, though, his charitable work. He's a major funder of organizations such as the Khan Academy. He gave them $5 million, which is sort of an online. And then he also started Coder Dojo. Coder Dojo, it's a program designed to encourage young children to start programming. Now, most recently, he founded a company called Karma. It's a 50-person operation in Cork, Ireland, that provides real-time carpooling solutions globally. So what you do here, I mean, it's kind of a clever thing. You load this carpooling thing on, and you say, okay, I'm driving from Washington, D.C. to Los Angeles, and I'm willing to take carpoolers. So people that have have that application, they ping it up there, and they say, oh, he's going to be in there. So then they notify you, and then you get pickup points to pick people up along the way.
Yes.
And so it's a way to self-organize
like
carpooling.
Yeah.
So that thing is going up. He's also chairman of the Irish Entrepreneurship Forum and founder of Open Ireland. And he's a leader in helping direct the Irish recovery in the tech sector because, Ireland had the big crash.
Right.
Now, in hindsight, Sean thought back on his life, and he said maybe at Map Info they should have actually been more aggressive with patents. They were the first movers. They controlled the entire idea. But now mapping programs like Google Maps are ubiquitous. So if he would have patented these ideas, I think he could have made big bucks out of that. And so that was his one regret. So there you go. Sean O'Sullivan, they called him a Renaissance man. He's a tech guy. He's a movie maker. He's a guy who's a philanthropist. So it's quite an interesting guy. Sean O'Sullivan, the man who co-founded MapInfo and coined the word cloud computing.
There you go. Well, I hope you were paying attention because coming up in just a minute, your chance to win free food from the doc for your knowledge. The pop quiz comes up next on the Tech Talk radio program, heard here on Federal News Radio every Saturday at 1500 AM, 820 AM, and 107.7 FM HD2. Tech Talk continues right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Technology is constantly changing. An effective IT manager must not only understand the possibilities and limitations of the technology, but also the requirements and constraints of the business world. Enhance your career today with a master's degree from Stratford University School of Computer Information Systems. Classes are offered day, evening, and weekends to match your busy schedule and are taught by experienced faculty members with industry experience. Earn your master's degree in as little as 15 months with an accelerated program in
software engineering, information systems, information assurance, or telecommunications. Learn more about earning your master's degree from Stratford University at stratford.edu or call 1-800-444-0804. Disclose statements available at stratford.edu/disclosures. Stratford University, 1-800-444-0804.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
It's time for Washington's most popular and longest-running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now, here's your host and star of our show. No, it's not Gene Rayburn. It's not Alex Trebek. It's not Richard Dawson. It's Dr. Richard Schertz.
Welcome back. Welcome back to the classroom of the airways and classroom of the internet.
You notice I've stopped putting up a fight here.
I know. There's just really no choice. Even though we're in a radio studio, this is actually a classroom.
It's not a radio program.
No, it's not in the least. We're in the virtual faculty lounge, so it should be radio. It should be a classroom. So what we've done here, we've created now an assessment tool called the Pop Quiz. And if you get the correct answer to the Pop Quiz, you'll win two tickets to fine dining, the Scoffier Dining Room, the Corem Dining Room. Now, all you have to do is just listen carefully and then call into the special phone number that that Mr. Russ will share with you in a moment. Now, earlier in the show, I was talking about Sean O'Sullivan. He's the co-founder of Map Info Corporation, and he coined the word cloud computing. Now, after he formed Map Info, and they had they were getting near the IPO, and he was like pulling out his cash, he formed a particular company, SOS Ventures. Where was that company headquartered?
So we're going to test your geographic knowledge today.
That's right. If you know the correct answer to that, you'll win two tickets to fine dining. Now, how can they reach us?
Why, thank you, Dr. Schertz. If you're calling from west of Schoharie, New York, it's 877-936-9333. Calling from east of Florence, Italy, it's 877-936-9333. And, of course, everybody else can call us on the wild card line, or I should say the wild card line, 877-936-9333. Once again, 877-936-9333. And while we wait for the phones to melt, Dr. Schertz, you have something else important to tell us.
Yes, and if you're sitting there drinking a cappuccino there in a piazza in Florence, and you've got iPhone with Skype, you can reach us via Skype on your iPhone.
Not to rub it in.
Simply connect to Tech Talk Radio 1, and that'll be forwarded directly to the studio free of charge.
The world traveler here.
Yes, indeed. Mm-hmm. So let's go. Now, I'm going to talk a little bit about how technology is making everyone a great photographer.
Yes.
There's kind of a theme here.
Yeah, there is.
It turned out the end of May. Things have happened. The Chicago Sun-Times laid off all of its staff photographers. I don't know if you remember that.
I didn't know that.
They laid them all off because they said they're just going to use freelancers and newswires and reporters armed with iPhones. They got rid of all their photographers.
It's amazing.
They just send people out with iPhones. Now, this is not the first time traditional media has turned to untrained photojournalists. Mm-hmm. You know, Instagram photos that NBC published after the Boston Marathon bombing or CNN's I Report. But, you know, and so now this crowdsourced, you know, social media type of generation of photos is becoming more and more prevalent. And now for the strategy to pay off, though, camera phone technology needs to improve a bit. The problem with camera phones, I mean, they're really nice. They've got a lot of megapixels, like Nokia's Pure View sensor's got 41 megapixels, and HTC's newer sensor grabs more light, but they still suffer from one great deficiency, all of them: inadequate lenses. You just don't have a zoom lens.
Yes.
And that really does crimp the quality of your photo. So engineers need to solve the problem by putting cellular radios into the big cameras. So now, like the 16.3 megapixel Samsung Galaxy cameras, now it's got a 4G radio, and it's got a 21 times zoom. So now you can upload them automatically from the big camera. See, I know people that got like a Nikon camera. Nobody likes it because you never get the pictures off of it to upload to Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Now these could be uploaded automatically. So that is sort of the latest trends. Now, editors also are going to need software to pick the best images. I mean, if you're an editor and you've got to now look through thousands of pictures to pick what the best one, that's a problem. So now they are they're now services that can provide kind of a temporary solution. ScoopShot, which is a Helsinki software startup, publishers can send photo assignment to the service's network of 3,000 plus mobile users, and they can get photos taken right away. Stringwire, NBC acquired last August, to let video producers request uplink from anyone who has tweeted near an event of interest. And what we need, though, is software that will help the editors automatically select the quality. And there's a lot of computer vision software that can do that. In a recent update, Google Plus analyzes groups of pictures for blurriness, aesthetics, and that sort of thing. And so that kind of cloud-based computing could be extremely useful. So in time, the decision that the Sun Times did to save money may turn out to be the best decision because they'll collect things. So this is just how technology is changing everything.
Yep. You know, on TV, a lot of TV reporters are now doing their own photography. They're calling it backpack journalism. Mm-hmm. All-in-one people.
Yeah.
And that little music means we have somebody on the phone.
Oh-ho.
Let us go to line two, Charlie. Here is Jack. Calling from Silver Spring. Jack, hi, how are you?
Hi, I'm great.
Earlier in the show, Jack, I was talking about the man who coined the term cloud computing, and he also created MapInfo. Now, after he got all the money out of MapInfo and he started his company, SOS Ventures, where did he headquarter that company?
Is it Cork, Ireland?
That is correct! You win two tickets to fine dining, to the Escoffier Dining Room, the Carême Dining Room. Just stay on your line and give your vital contact information to our academic producer.
And nothing more than that. That'd be Andrew Mitchell, who is our adjunct professor for prize distribution and otherwise crowd management. I'd say crowd management as well, yes. Thank you very much, Jack, for calling. Hang on just a second. You're listening to Tech Talk, and this is Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 1077 FM HD2. And we will have more Tech Talk following the break here on Federal News Radio.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Budget analyst, the vice president of sales. These are today's business leaders, and a degree from Stratford University's Tyson's Corner or Woodbridge campus offers you a powerful path to navigate the corporate world. The School of Business Administration at Stratford University offers both bachelor's and master's degree programs for a real-world education. In fact, many of today's Stratford business grads are working in their chosen fields. Make it work for you. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu. It's time. Time to put your talents out there on your terms and set your own pay. If you are ready to be your own CEO, Stratford University's life-changing Master's in Entrepreneurial Management covers the skills to launch your business from writing a solid business plan to financing, branding, and marketing. Choose from our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge. Contact us today at stratford.edu. Stratford University. It's time to be more.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. The latest development in hard drive technology would be helium-filled hard drives.
Are you serious?
Helium-filled hard drives. Western Digital's subsidiary, HGST, I don't know what that stands for. Uh-oh, there we go.
Let me hear what's going on over here.
Mr. Big Voice, would you quit playing with the... He's playing with the control panel.
Clearly messing something
so up. So Western Digital subsidiary, HGST, has announced their latest breakthrough in storage density with... helium, using helium gas. By filling the drive enclosure with helium gas, HGST claims to have reduced the drag inside the typical hard drive to a point where it can add more platters inside the same space. Where once it could only fit five platters, it can now cram in seven, resulting in a single drive with a capacity of up to 6 terabytes. Now, these are now being tested by the big storage operators, HT, Huawei, CERN, and Netflix. And it recently started trialing 4K videos, which recently started trialing 4K video streaming. That'd be Netflix. So they've all been named as potential customers. HGST is going to start shipping out Helium Field UltraStore HE6, claiming best-in-class power and space efficiency. It's going to be shipping those very quickly. Now, because the hard drives are airtight, they're suitable for use in the new immersion-cooled data centers. You know, the new data centers, they just put them underwater. They just put them in oil.
Mm-hmm.
They're not air-cooled. They just have all the computers sitting in oil or some sort of thermal bath.
So, no kidding.
So these would be perfect for these immersion-cooled data centers. That's kind of an interesting
thing. That's very interesting, yeah.
Well, they're still talking about Edward Snowden.
And, probably will be for a long time.
It turned out he didn't really have access to all of that data, but he found ways to get it. It turned out that Edward Snowden used login credentials and passwords provided unwittingly by colleagues
mm-hmm.
at the spy center in Hawaii to access some of the classified information. Now, a handful of agency employees who gave their login details to Snowden were identified, questioned, and removed from their assignments, as they should be. Snowden, get this, Snowden persuaded 20 to 25 fellow workers at NSA, regional operations in Hawaii, to give him their login and passwords, saying that, well, you know, I need that to do my job as the computer systems administrator. It wasn't really true. And so he could access all the data that they had access to, even if he didn't have a need to know. So this shows the inadequacy of security measures at NSA and why this created the worst data breach in classified data history. Now, it turned out NSA was supposed to put in the most up-to-date anti-leak software in Hawaii before Snowden went to work there. And before they uploaded all the documents there, but they never got around to it. Now, it's not clear what the rules are, whether the employees broke the rules by giving Snowden their passwords, because, you know, I mean, he was a contractor. They thought, well, okay, this guy works for us. He's here. But they shouldn't have really released that. So the sources at NSA did not reveal whether they were removed from their assignment or fired.
Aha.
So this, just beware of this. Mm-hmm. I thought I would highlight that because we've got a lot of classified folks here. So just beware not to share your password inadvertently.
No. Doc, we've come to a fork in the road here.
Mm-hmm.
You can either finish out the program with all, because you got a lot of stuff, or we can take a break. We will stay. This is bonus coverage.
This is bonus. Exactly.
Bonus coverage. Bonus coverage.
Yeah, I know we certainly mm-hmm. do. That's right. Wolfram Alpha. If you ever go to Wolfram Alpha search engine, have you ever used that search engine?
I have not, no.
So you really need to try that out.
I will.
So you can just type it in, and it'll
Let's
take you there.
Let's do that now, while you're talking about it.
So Wolfram Alpha, I really like this one, it's a search engine that has sort of artificial intelligence built into it. It's the Wolfram Alpha Computational Knowledge Engine. I mean, it is very, very nice. You can search for stuff. Just search for things. It gives you tables of data. It's nicely formatted. It actually, instead of just doing a search for links like Google does, it actually searches the data, assembles the data, organizes it, and gives you a table of the output. So it sort of processes the data for you and just turns – and just it's very, very nice to use. If you talk, ask it for things that it knows how to do. Now, they have created a problem generator. You know, one of the problems, you know, you got math kids trying to learn problems, and then so you have to, if you're the parent, you got to make up problems for them and you test them out. Well, they've created a problem generator, and it's available to all Wolfram Alpha Pro subscribers. And this generator produces problems in arithmetic, number theory, algebra, calculus, linear algebra, statistics. And the difficulty of the questions can be tuned up or down for the students, depending on whether they're in elementary school or whether they're in college. And the materials for students in chemistry in elementary and secondary schools, it turns out the materials that are included in the problem set closely follow the Common Core Standards Initiative that's being implemented nationwide. So using the tools is pretty straightforward. Students or their teachers choose which topic they want to study in the difficulty level, and the system will generate a problem. The team notes that the tool uses Wolfram Alpha's natural language processing capability to try to understand the student answers. And this may actually be a highlight to the service because it's very, you know, you can sort of just ask the question, or you don't have to use precise syntax to answer it. Now, if the student can't find the answer, Wolfram Alpha shows a step-by-step solution. The problem generator also allows teachers to easily create printable quizzes with multiple choice tests. See, now teachers are like that. But you have to have a pro subscription, so this is $4.99 a month.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can sign up for this free. You can get like a 7-day trial, which I did. I'm not a pro member. I got a 7-day trial, tried it out. I did like the problem generator. Or if you're a student, you can get it for $2.99 per month.
Yeah, so. I know people that are problem generators.
Oh yeah,
But they're free usually.
But you can't adjust the difficulty of the problem with them.
Generally, when they generate a problem, then they start costing you money.
That's right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever watch the show Shark Tank?
I have not. Sharks scare me, Doc.
No. This is like they've got four people who invest in businesses.
Those kind of sharks.
And then some guy comes up there with a proposal, and he tries to get them to invest in it for a certain percentage of the company.
This is the NBC show, right?
Yeah. All right. I kind of enjoy watching this. Well, there was a company called which was called Scan, started by Garrett G. You've heard of these codes where you can scan these two-dimensional codes.
Mm-hmm.
The QR codes. So this particular company, it was like a QR code scanner, and he had recently raised $7 million on a $21 million valuation from Google Ventures, Menlo Ventures, and Entree Capital. And so what he got the idea. He says, well, why don't I go into Shark Tank and see if I can get money from them? So he went on. I mean, he'd already gotten the line. This wasn't your classic case. So he went on to Shark Tank and he said, look, I'll give you 5% of the company for $1 million. Because it was valued at $21 million. So he said, okay, 5% is about $1 million. So he asked for $1 million for 5%. Now, actually, his investors weren't too happy with this, but he went on there anyway. And the sharks, they weren't going to put $1 million into this. They said, you don't need money. But actually what he wanted was exposure.
Uh-huh. Right. Yeah, sure.
Exposure. So before the show aired, Scan's $1.99 app was number 5 among the utilities for Apple's. And it was 150. It was listed as 150th most popular of paid apps. After the show aired, Scan shot up to number 1 among paid apps from 150 in the utilities category, and it was number 1 in the utilities category, but 25 among all paid apps. It also listed among the top of all paid apps in the Windows Phone store. So the value of being on the Shark Tank for them is that you can actually get visibility and coverage.
Sure.
Man, I tell you, this show just spun
it just
by.
It flies by.
You know, when you talk about Florence, time just flies.
It does.
It just flies. Mm-hmm. Well, listen, we love your emails. Send emails to us. Send us emails to techtalk@stratford.edu. Also, check out the Stratford programs by going to the Stratford website, www.stratford.edu. And when you go there and contact Stratford, find out about the programs. Let them know you heard about them on Tech Talk.
And, of course, if you tuned in later and would like to hear the show again, we will rebroadcast Tech Talk tomorrow on this very radio station at 7:05 p.m. See you next week.
Paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT-FM HD2 Manassas. This is Federal News Radio on the air at 1500 AM. a.m. and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. The Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, American University Eagles, Washington Nationals, and the Washington Capitals. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
And, of course, coming up on the radio a little later on today, it is Navy, the midshipmen taking on the Rainbow Warriors of the University of Hawaii, making the longest road trip of the year. 3 o'clock for the first for the kickoff, 2 o'clock for the pregame show. And then tonight, Caps take on the Phoenix Coyotes beginning at 7:45. Forecast, sunny, chilly, 46 now in Northwest.
Commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and